welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in Apple. Of course, there was a keynote, and we'll be analysing a bit of that and looking at any of the rumours that come from it. We've got some fantastic people here to take us through it. Starting us off, top left, Patrice. Looking lovely with the lighting, mate. What's...
I don't know. I haven't changed anything. It's like it has been a couple of weeks ago.
So. You've got the white balance just perfect as well, because the room's a bluey white and you're bright yellow. But in a balanced way, though, not horrifically. not like you've been on a sunbed or a fake tan or anything.
Not like an Oompa Loompa or anything.
Yeah, that's good. No, that's just me. I'm glowing, probably.
Excellent, mate.
Don't know why, but...
Good. And you're coming to the bash?
I'm coming to the bash. Just ordered the tickets today. Or got
awesome,
the tickets
mate. Today. Awesome, awesome, awesome. That's, can't wait to have you. I hope it doesn't piss down with rain now. Come all that way. Next to him, the man with no voice. But now he's got his voice, Adam.
A little bit of a voice.
Yeah, no, yeah. You're going to give us the dusky tones today. Just keep it, don't get excited, yeah. No shouting and getting upset with me.
I have that 10-pack-a-day sound.
Yeah, do some voiceovers while you can in the world.
No, and I got a new Mac. I'm excited about that.
We saw the unboxing on Monday night. Is it working? Is it up and running? And
yeah, it's beautiful. Smoking. It's perfect. Almost perfect. I'm having a little issue with some of my external drives, but other than that, it's great.
Yeah, the permissions on the external drives I find is flaky, because I use external Thunderbolt drives, and periodically I'll go in and it'll list me twice on the permissions
it's a wake from sleep kind of corruption bug. Occasionally they'll unmount and remount. It was really bad at first, but I discovered a tip. So if anybody actually runs into this, if you go into your main system preferences folder, so not the one in your home folder, but off the root of your hard drive, and there is a there is something called, and I'm going to look now because I can never remember, system configuration.
Yeah,
a bunch of plist files. If you just dump all those and then reboot, you know, and then trash them, it'll rebuild all those things, and that seems to have solved the problem 99%. I'm still having an occasional one that seems to drop.
Okay.
But it's a lot less, so I don't know what that's all about.
I'm getting problems with Quick Look as well. If I look at something like a piece of movie and then using the space bar and then I go back, I get a beach ball off that. Mm. So I'll try that because that might solve that problem.
That sysconfig trick works really good for when you get a network that it just won't behave, like you keep kicking you off or you can't connect and you know you're on the right network. That's the same exact trick. That was our Genius Bar instant trick.
Excellent. And that's Doc Rock. How you doing, mate?
Aloha.
Hello.
How's it?
And you finally got Jerome in the Slack room.
Yeah. Because he's been screwing up 3D prints and he keeps texting me at like 5 in the morning. Hey, what's the temperature again? I'm like, ask you and I'm sleeping. A-hole.
He doesn't ask me. Well, yeah, but that's me. He's going to look at what I did this morning now and just not...
not listen.
Not listen to a word I say. No.
Oh, man. It's my, I'm almost as bad as Adam, but I recover faster just because I do this every weekend. But my voice is shot yesterday because I got Cavs game going on one TV and then the USA game going on the other TV. And I'm just like screaming like a maniac and drinking heavily peated scotch that Ewan hates.
I did see you last night getting pissed on that video with everyone shouting something about winning.
Yes.
And last but by no means least, Gaz, where you been, man? I ain't seen you in ages.
Yeah, just busy, kind of about, doing, well, rugby stuff still.
Still? You're not finished yet?
Sevens.
Oh, bugger.
Yeah, it's that time of year. But in fact, got the Milton Keynes sevens tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
Apparently there are 100 games.
There's 100 games, but you're not doing them all?
No.
You'll do 5, maybe?
No.
6 if they let you do the final.
We might.
Something like that.
We can play the guess who's on their eyesight camera game.
Actually, it's not. It's
no, do you have the Logitech too?
Yeah.
Yours is a little soft like mine. Patrice and Doc are looking sexy.
Yeah, I know.
Logitech. do you have dongles on that Mac the back there?
Yeah, he's got an HDMI to VGA or DVI converter or something, isn't it?
Yeah, then there's another one next to it, another kind of rounded one.
That's the plug.
Eh?
That's a plug.
Oh, UK.
That's a UK plug, yeah. There we go. Not a plug for
it. Doing well. Doing well.
Yeah. Thank you for those people who bothered to give us some feedback about Monday.
I'm scared.
Good or bad feedback?
We had a couple of people say that it's very kind things on Twitter. Let me find the guy. Where is he gone? But he said our coverage was easily the funniest. That's very kind of you. Thank you very much. Where's he gone? Come on. It wasn't Patrick. It was... never mind. I'll find it in a minute and I'll give it you. And we've also had an email from Andrew Todd in Hertfordshire. Thank you for writing in, Andrew. Great email. Dear Ewan and the team, I'm writing on 2 points relating to the WWDC keynote coverage on Monday. Firstly, the juvenile and irreverent way in which you mocked the keynote speakers, and also the sniping comments at almost all of Apple's changes to their operating systems. Secondly, and I'm sorry, but this is on a less positive note.
What?
I thought the audio from the keynote was drowning you chaps out too much. Please note the lack of emojis in this email. Great to have you all back. Regards, Andrew. Thanks, Andrew. Very kind, mate.
Now, wait, I know you said all these things about the emoji and the stickers thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I make one plea, though?
Go on.
I want you to make and sell a BTN Wall of Shame sticker pack.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I'm already halfway through reading the SDK, and of course I have experience in this field, and Patrice is here to help us.
So I can do the PNGs for that. What size do they need to be?
Apple has a spec, and you don't even have to code. You open up Xcode, apparently, and you drop them in, and you're done. Yeah.
There's even a session video.
There's a video on Apple TV.
All right, so you lost me at open up Xcode, but yeah, sure, I'll do the PNGs for that, no problem.
Yeah, just send them to this bloke named Patrice, and somewhere between
Patrice will do it.
Vassamel and Salat, it'll get done.
Yeah. Yes.
we've also had a couple of reviews. Thank you to those people who bothered to leave reviews. First one is from Aspar Gal. Enjoyed watching the Mac Show and the Big Show for a few years. I like the tech with some fun thrown in. You can't beat the BTN gang of rotating regulars. Thanks to you and the gang for keeping me laughing and finding tech stories even when there's no obvious news. They don't take themselves too seriously, and it's clear that they like each other. Which helps too. Also, a big thank you to Patrice for hanging the American flag properly. It's bothered me for months that it wasn't. I'm so glad that the stars are finally on the top left where they belong.
Yes.
You should have Googled it.
No, I noticed that myself. I don't know why, how I got that wrong.
Signing out as a relieved Yank in California.
you got it wrong.
Yeah, sorry, I had to write that email.
You guys don't have
bothering me forever.
That was from the Pedants Association of America. I've now listened to, this is from DAU, I've now listened to that show for about 3 years. It's a great show, and although I rarely listen to it live, I look forward to it popping into my podcast every week. I really enjoy listening to the guys and girls' opinions and know them all, and feel like I know them all. Very informative and a great laugh. Keep it coming, Ewan. Thanks very much, matey. And the real mad scientist has left us one after Monday. I was listening to the podcast early whilst eating my breakfast with a mouthful of tea and toast when annihilating Jeff's ring came up as a subject.
Pebble Dash Kitchen.
There was tea and toast everywhere and tears running down my face. Yet another seminal moment in podcasting. Keep up the great work. Fantastic. Thanks for everyone.
Another seminal moment?
Seminal moment, yes, with Jeff. Thank you for leaving reviews. Reviews make a big difference to our position in iTunes. If you can leave us a review, we'll go back and amend a review or something like that, then please, please do it. And the Slack room's been doing the unsubscribe Friday and resubscribe Sunday thing. Well, I don't know whether it works or not, but it makes a big
probably
difference.
Probably not anymore. They've probably caught on to that one. Yeah. That's an oldie.
But certainly reviews helps. Do reviews. Please, please, please do reviews. It makes a world of difference.
They've definitely changed the algorithms recently. Ken Ray noticed something change, and he's been benefiting from it. We can't figure out what it is.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you look at you and Greeny look like you're tied together. They're like Siamese twins, mate. Conjoined twins, sorry. Because every time you go down or he goes down or up or down, you're both right next to each other. And the thing is, I'd be really pissed off if it was you, because Greeny hasn't made a podcast in a year. over a year, and he's only got two showing on his entire feed. So
yeah, but what a back cat. Oh.
Yeah, he's only got two. So it's not new subscribers, it's not new views, is it? So
nope.
I don't know.
It's bribery.
I have no idea. He's just an anathema. Following on from the conversation, I also had a lot of emails that people said that they thought the in-app purchase conversation that we had a few weeks ago was an absolute gem. They really appreciated that someone just, you know, speaking candidly about it. And we also had a pick from Chris Campion on one of the shows about WGT Golf. Do you remember that? The World Tour Golf thing? And I've got to say, I enjoyed playing it up until I hit pro status. And now it's just, it's attritional and it's awful. And it's all it's trying to do is sell me golf clubs constantly. But I found this in the shop, and I was a bit pissed off, actually, to be honest, when I saw this. So this is a putter that you can buy in the pro shop. It is 400,000 credits. Are you ready for this? That is $4,000.
Crazy. For a bitmap.
There is a, yeah, exactly. There is a putter in the parameter changes and a bitmap change, and they're going to take $4,000 off you. So I've changed my review now of WGT. It's a piece of shit.
Can you not earn credits without paying for them?
You get awarded credits when you change your level and status, and you can sit and watch advertising videos and get 2 credits for them. So you've got to watch 2,000 videos to get enough credits to pay for that.
But if you're a good player, what kind of credit?
200,000 videos.
Yeah, 200,000 videos. Spot on. Yeah, sorry. No, if you're a good player and you win the tournaments, you can win credits in the tournaments and you can win money in
how
the
many?
Tournaments. I think you can win $900 if you win the US Open on there, something like that.
Okay.
So that still would take you forever.
It still you'd still have to win.
Well, you'd have to win.
So.
Plus 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
A little more than six times.
And
right?
There's people out there that have clearly, I mean, there's guys out there that are saying that they're tour pros on WGT, and they've clearly spent money on the equipment. And I think if you do spend money on the equipment and balls, you get, what's it? And today I was playing in the little tournament that we have in our little country club thing, and it took one of my balls out of play because it was too old. I'm like, you can't do that. So I got pissed off with that. That's it.
There's surgery for that.
Yeah.
You know, my point is though it's sort of like my pick from last month, which I think, you know, tops, I did the Star Wars card trading thing, and the amounts that they charge for stuff I think is ridiculous. But at the same time, you know, they're probably making a ton of money off of it, and each day they give me what amounts to about $5 worth of credit for free. Now it's much harder to get sort of the rare cards and the things that you want, but at the same time, I don't have to spend money on it, and I can experience the game, you know, in a certain way. And the people that want to spend their money on it, which I think is crazy, they do. So, you know, I don't know that I can begrudge the company if they can sell $4,000 virtual putter and someone will buy it. That's $4,000 of almost pure profit. So more power to them if they can do it. We don't have to like it. You know, just like you're saying, it's your prerogative to say, this is shit. I'm not going to play the game. But, you know, I don't know. I'm getting less and less inclined to call the company evil because they're finding a way to make a crap ton of money. I mean, if they can, great. You know, we all don't have to participate or if we don't like it.
Yeah, my issue with this kind of thinking is if it was a productivity app or anything like that, you could say, okay, with this money you can one guy can basically fund usage and updates for a lot of other people, but with games, I mean, they are so quickly out of style that they probably rarely get even updated for new OS versions or new features that you could get new hardware or whatever. So you're really just, it's pure profit. That's fine. But it's still, I still don't like that way of.
Yeah. But my point is there's a lot of people that apparently do and are perfectly okay with it. And maybe I need to get rid of my old man, get off your lawn mentality and just get with the program, not get with the program, cause I'm not going to participate in those schemes, but you know, I'll find the stuff that works for me. But if somebody else wants, if that's how they want to blow their money, I think it's stupid, but hey, more power to you. Go for it.
You guys remember the first app? I believe, if I remember correctly, it was like $1,000 to get basically a sparkling picture of a gold dollar sign.
Right.
And everyone poo-pooed it or whatever. But the developer kind of did it as a joke. He had no idea that there's these Richtagram kids that would basically go and buy it just so they can post pictures on their social media to say that they could afford it.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And I remember when working at Truo at the time, like actually Instagram wasn't all the way out yet at that point, but it was really mostly about Facebook. And everyone was all kind of up in the piss about this is the dumbest thing ever, whatever. But at the same token, like I was like, we do this a lot with food. We do this a lot with restaurants. God be sure we do it for medicine. You know, I'm taking asthma medicine right now just because as the weather changes, I get wheezy. That in the U.S., it costs $300 for this pump, but I could buy this pump in Puerto Rico, the same exact pump for $3 over the counter. But because the U.S. insurance system allows it to work the way it works, it literally $300 for this pump. Now, granted, my insurance covers it. I pay like a $7 copay, but even at the $7 copay, I'm $4 over what it really costs. So it's kind of weird how this stuff works, but in the same token, I kind of agree with Adam. You should charge what the market would bear. And the market is, if anybody is crazy enough to spend that money, then you can't really be mad at the company for charging what the market would bear because the market technically sets the price. Now, if they sell a $400,000 credit putter
I've
and no one ever buys it, then the market is wrong, so they have to move it down or never sell one.
I've got to take issue with that because that's not what the apps are doing in the App Store. The apps are creating ways to extort money, and they're creating ways to create problems between parents and children, and they're creating ways that the game can be a worse user experience until you pay money. So, you know, if you look at Let's Go Free, they did this thing where they had to, where you had to have energy levels, and you had to just wait 35 minutes before you could take a single shot, and then you had to wait another 35 minutes before you could, or you could pay 35 quid and get an energy pill. And I hated that, but at least you knew what you were getting with that to a certain degree. With the WGT stuff, I've gone from being an amateur who can put, now that I'm a pro on there, I can't reach any of the hardly any of the par fours in two because I've been pushed back on the tees. And when I do get on the green, I never do less than three putts, never. And I didn't turn into a crap putter.
So the mechanics of the game got worse all of a sudden because you don't have this putter.
Because I've gone up the next stage and because I haven't paid any money.
That's douchey.
But again, that's fine. So you have that experience and you say, well, this is bullshit. I'm not going to play this game anymore. There is another person out there that is obviously saying, hey, I'm willing to invest in this and pay this stupid extortion fee and do it. And if people are that dumb,
yeah, but the problem
then
is whose fault is that? Is that the
developer's fault?
And I enjoyed playing the game, and okay, I knew it was trying to sell me stuff, but you know, I paid a few quid to them because I thought, you know, deserve it. It's a great game. Now it's not a great game. It's virtually unplayable to me, and that money that I spent is gone, and I can't go back in my level so that I can be competitive again with any of the people that are around me. We've got a little tournament that we play.
So they took your money, wedged you in the corner unless you want to give them more money, and that is actually extortion.
Yeah.
They do that all the time. So, I mean, games do that all the time. Yeah, it's the new economy.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's extortion. Making something negative to the point that you cannot abide it unless you pay more money is extortion. It is a
way if you can level down, I will let it slide. But the fact that they got you stuck where you can't level back down and the only way you can progress is to actually spend money or spend countless of hours trying to play at an impossible. You can't win anymore, so you can't actually level up.
We play a little tournament.
So sorry, Ewan.
Yeah.
Are you saying that someone should jump in and put legislation?
I think Apple need to control the way that in-app purchases are dealt with. They've got a completely hands-off approach.
Well, we find ourselves moaning at Apple because they're doing it not in the way that we appreciate.
Anybody who's done professional sports in the real world knows that, I mean, this, and I don't want to draw this direct analogy, but I mean, at the same time, when you start leveling up your skills in the real world, you start having to spend real money. If you want to be a golf pro, you're going to buy more expensive clubs. You're going to buy more things. So if that's what you're into and that's your hobby or your passion or whatever, and I mean, we do it with podcast equipment too. You buy more expensive gear. You get more into it professionally. I mean, it's not quite the same thing, but at the same time, it's just like, yeah, you had a game. Go find another game that you enjoy that doesn't do that to you and move on with your life. I mean, why do we get so upset about this?
It's nothing like the same thing, Adam. When I was a four handicap golfer. I caddied on the European tour for 2 years. I know how to play the game. But when I went from a six handicap to a four handicap, I didn't have to suddenly start putting one-handed. My putter didn't suddenly stop working. And it was like, oh, well, you're going to have to buy a better putter now that you're four handicapper. You can't carry on with the same old putter. Yeah, mentally, I might have done that in my head and I might have thought about buying new clubs and that kind of stuff. But that was a choice I made. It wasn't someone telling me, right, you can't play a golf course anymore because you're a four handicapper and you haven't bought a brand new set of clubs.
I don't know. It just sounds like sour grapes to me. Like, okay, the game screwed you. Yes. Then don't participate in those games and move on with your life.
I think it's not on Apple to regulate that, but it is on other customers to say, okay, this is not right. Give it negative reviews.
I think the thing that you've got to bear in mind as well, and I don't think any of you have got any small children that are affected by this.
I totally get
that. There is a massive issue, and I have this day day out with Ellis over in-app purchases in games, and I have it with Bryony constantly saying, why can't I just, and he wants to spend his own money to buy in-app purchases where he gets absolutely nothing, and it's a terrible, terrible thing that I have to legislate with him and try and steer him in a path that's like, no, okay, I don't mind you buying that because that'll allow you to if you lose the game, you can re-download your purchases, and that's fine. But, you know, he spent £70 on Black Ops 3 add-ons that are just bitmaps. And you just kind of like, I just, it's his money, but I've got to protect my son from spending his money on stuff to developers that just want to steal from him. Because that is, I mean, $70 for different bitmaps for guns is just stupid.
But you're right. Cannot. And so maybe this is the broader conversation to have is, I mean, as parents, as people raising the next generation of people that are going into this ecosystem, we do that in my house. We have constant conversations about when my kids ask to spend money on anything. It could be virtual stuff. It could be, you know, the stupid little gumball machine things, whatever. You have the conversation about, yeah, it's your money, but here's why I don't think you should spend that. And you try and teach them and you try and educate them. And then, long-term things will change. I think you're doing the right thing, Ewan. And if he still wants to spend his money on it, That does get tough. It's hard on a parent to see. I totally agree with that.
Holy shit, the conversations that we have and negative energy that's around
until
because of
Apple
it.
Apple start seeing it in some serious complaints, and I think they will just yet.
But I mean, this is a conversation parents have been having with kids for forever. You know, with me, it was trading cards and comic books or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, this is just a new. It's just a new thing.
No, I see. Look, Ellis subscribes to a Marvel Comics, DC Comics hardback book, and every 2 weeks it comes in. And it's £10 for this thing. It's a really well made thing. It looks good.
Right.
The pictures are great. It's a hardback edition. It's a collectible thing. He's got them all up on his shelf, and they form this little spine that makes a picture.
Yeah.
And he's spending his good money on that, but he has something in his hand that is his that he can keep and he can treasure.
That, I think that there is maybe even a divide in age, because I mean nowadays digital goods are also something that are valuable. I mean, if you buy music on iTunes, you can put it in your hand and you can touch it and it still exists. And I mean, the digital copy costs nothing. Paying, I don't know, 99 cents for a song.
It's not yours. You have a license to listen to it. That license can be revoked at any time. And if you are in the iTunes store,
same thing.
And they choose to take it down and the license is revoked by the artist, it is gone. It is not yours anymore.
Yeah, but isn't it the same thing for this game then? It's something virtual that can be taken away. I mean, if the developer decides to take down the app, and it might stop working with the next update, then it's gone.
Yeah.
So same thing.
But I've got to say, in equity here, I have had some significant issues with one of the games where I paid for an upgrade on an in-app purchase, and I went back to Apple and said, look, this is what they told me I was going to get. I didn't get it. The guy that I got, I paid to get an upgrade to a draft pick in a baseball game. I got a draft pick, which was a really good pitcher, and all they did was stick him on the bench, and I had to buy ice packs to get him off the bench. And I said, that's not what I paid it for. I want my money back. And they just instantly, not a problem. Mm. There you go. We'll have to look into that application. And it's gone. And they were good. They were real good when you complained. So kudos to Apple. I'm going to see if I can get me money back for WGT now. that's not what we wanted. That's not what we came here to discuss, really. We're here for the keynote. Sorry.
Well, that was a good conversation.
We can talk about all those developers raking money from us.
Developers.
we're not talking about Microsoft.
Did you like it?
The keynote?
I'm going to say yes and no, and I'm going to explain.
Holy crap. Doc's going to say no. Right, whatever you're doing, stop. Stop the car right now. Doc is going to say he didn't like something from Apple. Mate, go on.
I didn't like the shirt that Tim was wearing.
Oh, give over.
I'm joking. The thing is, the keynote did exactly what the keynote is supposed to do, give the State of the Union address, so to speak, and talk towards what the developers can look forward to for the week that they are going to be at the conference. And that way they can figure out what tracks, you know, they want to assign themselves to, especially with new and burgeoning technologies coming out. And like, okay, yeah, I want to follow this thing. Hey, I want to check out this new Sprite kit. Yes, I want to check out Home Kit. I want to check out Siri Kit or iMessage Kit or whatever the hell kits they had going. Theoretically, that's what it's for. But recently, somewhere within the last 4 or 5 years, it's also become somewhat of a consumer, let me show you what we got going on kind of thing. And unfortunately, it did drag long because they're trying to impress the shareholders and the consumers, and that's not what that keynote was traditionally for. So I'm the person who loves football. I love the Super Bowl. I hate all of the now week and a half build-up shows and, you know, after shows. Like, let the game be what the game is. Enjoy the game. All of that unnecessary fuff, making over-commercialized BS, it's sort of what that keynote turned into now. And I mean, it's a microcosm of what the Super Bowl is, but it's very similar, you know, and it's unnecessary. You know what I mean? Like, I don't mind a half an hour pregame show, but when you go to any major sporting events and they got like 3 days worth of pregame shows, that crap becomes irritating and you're building hype and nothing happens worse than when the game doesn't match the hype. So
okay,
we got good stuff in the keynote.
Pull it back to the keynote,
Nothing that matched the hype of what they turned the keynote into. So it actually belittles what we got, if that makes any sense to you. It makes sense to me.
Where were you when Dot Rock said something negative about Apple? Jesus.
I say negative crap about Apple all the time, but it's just that I don't do the I'm mad to be mad crap. If I'm mad, I got good reason.
Okay.
I think Doc is right. I mean, I got the same feeling from the keynote. I mean, they definitely didn't talk about a lot of things that we got then in the State of the Union and in the documentation and all of that. But overall, there was no, I would say there were no flashy, big headline features. A lot of smaller things, but overall, nothing too big. And I hope that means that they have really done what we asked them to do and have focused on really making the things they have created and the rest of the system more stable. And I mean, because you said it, El Capitan is crap. And
thank you.
Yeah, you know, I agree. And I think that's what they should focus on. And I hope that's what they did. I mean, I got the feeling that they did because the beta is more stable. Even the beta is more stable.
Amazingly stable.
Yeah.
For a beta. I'm kind of mind blown.
What were you saying, Adam?
I was going to say, if people listen to the live coverage, they noticed that I kind of felt my immediate reaction was, wow, they're really not playing to developers. Yeah, but after the event, when I rewatched it and I stepped back a little bit, the big announcement is in there, but it's in the subtext. And the big announcement is apps everywhere. Yep. And more than that, it's about... I think developers need to realize that in the long run, in some ways, the app is dead. Like, the big app is dead. What Apple has done is started to open up the operating system, and I think they're going to open it up more and more to voice with Siri, more and more with AI, and more with your apps integrating and working inside the operating system at an OS level or within an individual app that Apple's doing. If you look at what's happening with iMessage, is you have an app store in iMessage, and that's all about exposing your quote-unquote apps functionality inside something that people are already using on a regular basis. So UIs, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, developers have to start to think about, wow, I can't hold on to my user interface so much because that may not be the thing that I'm selling. What I might be selling more is my services and my technology plugging into the device itself, or a voice interface, or some other thing. And that's like a huge thing that developers are going to sort of have to wrap their heads around.
Yeah. If there's one theme to this WWDC, it is integration and opening up the platform. I mean, we got the whole Siri APIs. We got messages. We got smart cards, more health integrations, more HomeKit stuff. And I mean, so much more I can even remember. It's a huge amount of information we got as developers. And as I said, the theme here is integration.
I mean, take a look at what they did to Uber. I mean, who's going to you're going to have the Uber app. Maybe you don't. You know, maybe you just have the Uber thing plugged into messages, but you're not going to open Uber anymore. You know, you're just going to order an Uber from Maps or order an Uber from iMessage. You know, so Uber spent all this time building an app, but they really, you're not going to need it in 6 months, year.
I listened to it afterwards because I was actually out and about, didn't listen to it live, which I normally do. But when I watched and listened to it afterwards, I quite enjoyed it. But the point I got out of it most, I think, was the cheers, as has been said by Adam and Patrice, the cheers that went up when they said, and we're opening up the APIs. And that was repeated time and time and time again. And I think the cheers that went out every time that was said. And my daughter, who's not really an Apple geek, she's got plenty of Apple gear because guess what? That's what I buy. And that's kind of they get hammered down. But she's in Turkey on holiday at the moment. But she watched the damn keynote. And she hasn't got a watch, got no interest in the watch. And she's jumping up and down about the OS, the watch OS. And it just completely threw me because we had a bit of a FaceTime this evening before she comes home. And she jumped in and was telling me about it. So they must be hitting the right button somewhere.
Yeah, you know, the thing that I think is great about the whole opening up of the APIs and you know, allowing this full extensibility between inter-apps operating is that we are going to allow people who don't really understand apps altogether will now have a certain capability of being able to use their devices a little bit better. And whenever you can make the experience easier for the regular people or for the neophytes, you have an opportunity to just grow even bigger than what you already are. And I think that comes into play where, like, you know, if you're already in a map and then someone can press a button and order their food or order their form of transportation or even see how long it's going to take until their friend meets them where they're going and stuff like that. That adds in the what I used to call the mom factor. It's not even fair anymore because some dads are just as horrible. But you know what I mean? Like, it's going to make it so much easier for regular people to be able to use certain types of apps. And I love the whole messaging thing. I think the big pieces were actually small pieces that people won't realize until they're fully baked. And you know what I mean? And so the media couldn't really go crazy with it. And a lot of them went, oh, there was really nothing. There's really nothing. Only a handful of even the tech blogs, the deep thinking tech blogs, they got it. They saw what the thing was opening. Apple came up to you and basically said, here, gang, here's a bechamel, or here's a white, you know, sugar cream. You go do what you want with it. And that was key. That's actually a big deal for Apple. That's not in their DNA, really. And then no one really picked that up. They're like, oh, man, there's no new watch. We thought there'd be a new watch. I think it's great. We don't need new hardware in order to get a brand new watch. And I, like a dummy, installed the beta on my watch, and I'm blown away that it's so functional. It doesn't do... It's not crappy. I'm running all three betas because I have, you know, enough machines to do so. And I'm blown away by how stable these betas are. It has never been like this. So the opening up the empty palette, if you will, for people to go in and make it the way that they want it is bigger than a brand new watch or a brand new iPhone, which they're not going to announce until closer to iPhone, thank goodness. You know, I actually like it.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
I think Apple's done a good job of hiding, though, the deeper thing, as I was trying to allude to. If you look at everything they're doing with widgets, with the integrations within the apps and stuff like that, developers have been wanting this for forever and ever.
Yes.
But it's a total democratization of their apps. Their app suddenly doesn't, it's at the same level. You know, Uber and Lyft and any other car service that wants to integrate with Maps is now all at the same playing field inside Maps or inside the widgets in, you know, in the new widgets interface or inside notifications, which are live and active. Apple's giving you more and more reasons to not launch the app. And remember that Apple closely guards and keeps track, you know, their privacy policies mean that there's a lot of data that's not going to be available back to developers if you're not opening their app. So it's going to be really interesting to see in the long run. I know developers are really excited right now, but it's going to change the landscape in ways that I think they're not really thinking about right now. Yeah, I think they're just seeing, oh, finally we have
APIs. They're slowly drawing us all in to be evil in 5 years' time.
But I'm not so sure.
It's going to be great for consumers. I just don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how developers react in the long term. Maybe it's ultimately really great for developers because people are still going to choose their sort of silos that they like. If you're a Lyft person, you're a Lyft person. If you're an Uber person, you're an Uber person. But by not having the apps, do they lose some of their marketing capabilities? Like how are you going to sell software to people? How are you going to convince them to use your service versus their service if they're all equal in the eyes of, you know, the app that I'm, the interface that I'm using for it?
I have to disagree with that a little bit. I think from purely from a developer's perspective, it allows me to have more entry points into my apps. Yes, certain things that are more convenient to do in other places will be done there. And I mean, great, they are still using my services, so why not? But for a lot of functions, I mean, you will start in a notification center widget or on the lock screen and then move into the app. So it's more windows into my app. And if I do my job right, I mean, people will still use it. And
how do you feel
at
about
the end,
home
it doesn't
entries?
Matter then. Go ahead.
How do you feel about home?
Home is a
as
little
bit... As it relates to what you just said.
Yeah, home is a little bit different. I can understand why Apple did it, because that was also my biggest criticism. You had to install an app to even use HomeKit with if you had any HomeKit-capable devices. So that was a little bit tricky. On the other hand, there will be opportunity. I mean, like with any other Apple-provided app, there will be plenty of opportunity for other apps to make it better, to offer advanced functionality. I mean, just look at all the email apps that are out there that are way better than anything Apple has done. And Apple's apps are good. They are just not, maybe not for pro users, or they don't do certain things. There's always a market that you can serve.
Yeah. I mean, I think too, sort of what I'm talking about plays into the fact that, you know, Apple is also, while it's not totally removing or uninstalling the apps per se, why they loosened up a little bit on their own internal apps as well. Yeah. You know, that ability to, that we found out after the fact to, hey, I can hide or take away the Apple Mail app because I prefer to use, Spark as my mail client. Well, that's great, but I think it's also a signal of Apple recognizing that the app in these new versions of the operating system is taking a smaller role in the overall experience.
Yes. And it's also allowing other developers to even get into the spotlight. If I can't remove the app and I have to use it, then there is no way that my mail app will be the number one mail app on the device, because there's always the default one. If I can remove that, then suddenly, I mean, if Apple's doing it right, that's a big question. Then suddenly Spark is the number one, the one and only male app on the system.
To me, it was a big signal. There's a big overarching thing of Apple saying they feel services are really going to be, in a lot of cases, the new apps. I mean, obviously, things like games are in a different realm. I mean, there's certain categories that are going to be in a different realm where you're going to have, you know, quote unquote, an app for a long, long time. But a lot of things, it's going to be more about the service than the actual, you know, app that's running and downloaded onto the device. And mail is one of those things. I mean, mail is really just at the end of the day a service. And these other mail clients, all they're providing is a user interface into that. But again, as you open up mail to more and more parts of the operating system, that user interface is going to become less and less critical. I mean, what does mail look like in a pure voice world with Siri? It's totally, and where is something like Spark or any other mail client's place in that? I don't know.
Yeah, the Siri bit bothers me a little bit because, I mean, I tried to get Siri to call someone yesterday, and it was just like, hey, Siri, can you call so-and-so? No, not now, sod off. and it was just like, oh, come on. And it was like, I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're asking. And I was on 4G in the house. No problems. You know, I got into
the... Yeah, I've come across that. It can be very frustrating, and they've got to overcome those issues before. Yeah.
How long's it been there? Well, you know, it's still doing crap.
The opening up of the APIs, though, should, again, help with that, right? Because suddenly, again, phone, Skype, Slack voice, WeChat, you know, I don't know, anything that does a VoIP thing now all sits at the same level. Or communication.
Oh, hang on. Because the problem you've got is you've opened up an API for an engine that's doing voice that doesn't work a lot of the time for me.
No, but I'm saying it should be able to get better, because if the phone app isn't responding, you now have something else that can pick up the Slack and say, look, I'm going to take that.
You also run the risk that all
of a
sudden...
The issue is that Siri itself is not responding. So, I mean,
that's what I'm saying. The whole engine is not going to work.
Siri has one huge problem that is going to take it some time. It shouldn't take it some time to get fixed, but it will take it some time to get fixed, and it's not even a development thing. The only way Siri gets better is people keep using it. But what happens is when you have someone that either has an accent or, we'll call it a speech impediment.
That's not
slightly different.
No, I'm in the car, and I say, Mr. Siri, please call Bob. And it does it. And I get home and I'm stood in a quiet kitchen by myself and it's, I'm sorry, I've got no idea what the hell you're on about. Yeah. I'm sorry, I've got no idea. What is wrong with you?
It's glitchy
as hell. And it always has been. It's never worked properly for me. It's got
But they just added something that you're not going to know yet. They added the ability to download a bigger Siri dictionary so that it doesn't have to make the internet call in order to process that dictionary. That's in the beta.
It's got the internet connection. That's my point, and it's still not working. That happens a lot.
But you don't know what happened. I'm
going to back this up to normal tech. Let's just F Siri. Let's drop Siri out the way. I'm going to open a brand new computer, and I'm going to plug an Ethernet cable in, and I'm going to go to Facebook.com. And every single day of the year, it loads. But every once in a while, it sits there and spins forever. Why? Because past your router and past 100 TB or UK2 or whomever your line is, there is a byte somewhere. And that byte sticks. I mean, you run a trace route on almost anything, it's 20 traces deep. You never know when you're making an internet connection where the byte is. That's not your phone. That's not Siri. But to the consumer, it's the phone and it's Siri. Like anybody that's ever messed with any trying to un-F DNS poisoning or any kind of crazy stuff. And sometimes they're really quick. Sometimes it's messed up for like 30 seconds. You'll never have a problem the rest of the day. The jacked up part is when you need it the most, many times you'll go to hit your favorite site on a perfectly working server and it'll still bite. That's the problem with the internet in general. So what they're fixing is they're bringing part of that home, and it will be an ever updating Siri database type thing of various languages and words. Living in Hawaii, trust me, Siri has been somewhat of a punk, because I got street names like Kalakaua and Pohuka'aina and Keawe and Auahi. And like in the beginning, Siri didn't know, but because I use Siri religiously, because I stick through the pain, Siri's smart as hell to me. And I got people sitting right next to me says mine doesn't work. And then I'll prove them by asking them for directions on Kalana and Ole Highway. And Siri goes, oh, yeah, here's, you know, Topher's house. He lives at blah, 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 Kalana and Ole Highway. No, they're like, how'd you get her to know that? And I said, because, well, I taught her, you know, and they're like, what do you mean you taught her? I'm like, Siri, that's not how you say that. All right, well, how do you say it? And then I fix it. And then so the more people use it as a whole, it will get better. But most people give in too fast. Yeah. And also getting rid of that internet connection thing, like lessening the amount of time it goes back and forth, will also make Siri better.
Yeah, but I think there's a difference between what you're saying and what I'm saying, though, Doc. I mean, I'm talking about...
No, it's not. Siri, I know exactly
Siri,
what you're saying.
Siri, make
you
a call
ask,
for
it's
me.
Simple. Turn
I
off
have
the
no
lights.
Idea.
How many... Let me ask you this. How often does that fail?
I get it regularly. I mean, I have complained about Siri regularly on this podcast saying it's a piece of shit and it
80%
doesn't
of the time?
Probably Siri doesn't work for me 60 or 70% of the time.
Yep. I would say for me it's 30, 40%.
Yeah. And Patrice, I mean, this is classic. I mean, this is just, I mean, I don't know how you survive, mate. Five times asking Siri to turn on your espresso machine today and it hasn't done it. That's just...
Yeah. It really took me five tries over, I think, an hour or something. First time I tried it from the office.
You did so well to make it to this podcast tonight, mate, with that kind of crap going on.
I got it.
Going back to WatchOS then, I've figured it out. I've actually sussed this, right? Because there's Mickey. And there's
it's
Minnie.
It's the same image.
It's not. It's Bruce Jenner. It is.
It was Bruce Jenner. Caitlyn Jenner.
No, because she's going back to Bruce Jenner now, isn't it? Because they made the money off the book and the sale and all that kind of stuff. So he's not having the tits after all. He's been a cross-dressing exercise to make a bit of money, allegedly. So there you go. Mickey is Bruce Jenner. So he's going to go to be Minnie, but Minnie's going to go back to being Bruce eventually. So there you go.
I have to say, WatchOS 3 is probably the biggest announcement. Or
I thought
the biggest
that
part
was
of
good. I mean,
it's so solid.
Anyone that says that they can defend that an entire quarter of that keynote was taken up with iMessages is going to get kicked off.
Yes.
He's going to get kicked off tonight.
Yes.
But I thought the section... I thought the section on Watch was the best bit by a long way because it changed the way you interact with it. It changed the way... And it was almost like they looked at it and gone, yeah, we thought that'd be cool, but actually it's shit.
Wait. I thought you were giving up your watch.
No, I thought the way...
Has this changed your mind?
No, I still don't use it for anything more than being a glorified egg timer.
You said it was shit and you weren't buying a new one.
I'm not suggesting that they're going to make me buy a new one, but I think...
Don't worry, Adam. As soon as Siri kicks in on it and he can only use Siri on his watch, he'll be thrown out the window.
If I can finish my point. My point was right. they weren't afraid to kick a shit interface into touch.
Mm.
And I was really impressed with that. Because they... Yeah. They did loads and loads of changes about how you interact with the watch. And Bob says, WatchOS 3 looks like a really worthwhile improvement.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Econ Bob says, Kennedy was assassinated, first man on the moon, the fall of the Berlin Wall, and Doc criticized Apple. There you go.
They did a rethink. You know, the thing about the watch stuff, though, I just want to comment on this because I think too many people are being very critical of a 1.0 product that I think if you look at the world of 1.0 products from any company was still a very solid offering. Yes, it had some major pain points, but most 1.0 products do.
I haven't got any pains with it. I just don't use it.
Right.
That's my point.
I'm not talking about just you, Ewan. This isn't all about you. So
oh,
you know.
Really?
Yeah. There's like other people
oh, it
out
is,
there
Adam.
That have
it is.
Levied serious complaints about WatchOS, and there's a lot of writing going on right now that is saying, oh, look, here's Apple admitting that they screwed up and the watch was a shitty product and they didn't do it right, blah, blah, blah. No, this is them taking feedback on a 1.0 product and looking at it and analyzing it and making it better, which is what every company does as they iterate product designs. And you can look at anything from Apple. Look at, you know, phone 1.0 to 2.0. And it's a huge improvement, and there's a lot of rethoughts that go into that. So this is anything new. I'm just taking issue with people like being critical and pointing to this and saying, oh, WatchOS 3 shows that Apple knew the Apple Watch was a shitty product when they launched it.
No,
I hate when people read into that, and not even just to blame Apple. Like, you know, there was an announcement this week about Xbox Scorpion coming out, and someone said the exact same thing about Xbox. And I'm like, you douchebag. The original one came out almost 3 years ago. That was the equipment that was available then. In tech, equipment grew so much over the last 3 years that they're announcing a new one. It wasn't like this is somebody's way of saying that they screwed up the first time. It's just, you know, technology moved forward, stuff happened. So I agree with you 100%, Adam. I hate when people do that. And I swear they know better. I think they're just doing it for clickbaiting. Because if they don't know better, they really should get off the keyboard and close their site.
Yes, please.
I'd be interested to see how many people regret buying the watch, as in, I don't use it for anything anymore. You know, that I couldn't use a normal watch for. And I've got to say, I've struggled really, really hard to try and get it to integrate into my daily life. I use it for making tea, and I tell the time on it periodically, and it's useful out on track if someone's ringing me and I can see who's calling me without having to get rid of it. And it's good for Slack notifications. And outside of that, I don't really use it for anything. And that's because there hasn't been a killer app.
You just named off like five things that you use it for regularly that are pretty cool and very useful and have changed your life in a maybe not a revolutionary way, but in a significant way, I would argue.
I'm not looking to light the blue touch paper here, but changed my life. Holy shit.
I didn't say changed. I said but they have influenced and have obviously had an impact.
I'm going to rewind that because I think you said changed. But
did I? Okay, well, sorry.
But there's some things that it does, and it's kind of nice once in a while, but I don't feel like I got. No, you're going to pick, if I say I don't feel like I got money's worth, you're going to light on that and you're going to give me a hard time over it, and that's not what I'm saying.
I'm not going to say that.
I will literally flip the car around, come back and get it because it would drive me crazy not having it. But I know many people don't have that same experience, and that's not a fanboy thing or whatever. I was that way about my Fitbit. Once you use a piece of tech every day and it's part of your system, you don't want to miss it.
I didn't have it on for a week while I was in hospital because I hadn't got it. I'd taken it off already by that point that night to charge it. So I was in hospital for a week without my watch, and I didn't miss it. I couldn't have cared less. And that was the thing that really hit home to me, how much I... Because I've worn it every single day since I bought it, apart from that. And then when it wasn't there, I didn't miss it. And that's when I suddenly realized, do you know what? I haven't got as much from this as I keep thinking I have.
Can
we get back to WatchOS 3? Because I think...
Despite the fact
that Ewan doesn't need it, I think it is still a really cool update. I mean...
I didn't say it wasn't.
What did they call it? The dock, I think.
The dock,
With the last couple of apps. Really, really useful. I mean, it's more useful than the glances ever were. Although they are basically a replacement.
The same thing.
Yeah. I mean, they basically now have the control center on the watch. Looks very similar, works basically the same way like control center on your iOS device.
Or like the settings glance did.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So the new, what I just showed, the new activity watch face is, I think, really cool. And the fact that I can switch between them. I basically now use at least two phases, one for the office with all my meetings and all the information on that. And when I get home, I switch to the activity one because that's the one I care most about when I'm at home. So there's so much. I mean, the ability to call 911 from the watch might also come in handy. I mean, I don't know.
I thought it was good.
Things like that. So there are so many small and also bigger things in the WatchOS 3 that, as I said, it's probably the biggest change, to a platform in...
I think one of the hardest things about tech pundocracy in general, right? I attempt to take it from the position I'm going to explain things that best result in information for other people. But being that we are human, it's hard not to take it as the way we like it, you know? So as much as I try not to inject that in because it drives me nuts when Leo does it, it's inevitable you're going to do it at some point in time. So, you know, to sort of minify the situation, like I understand what Ewan is saying. In this particular case right now, his value proposition of the watch versus what he paid for it and everyday use doesn't really yeah. match his current value proposition. He did not 1 second say that this product is shit because he doesn't use it. You know, and I think that we oftentimes hear other people do that. And then so sometimes, even though he was saying that, we might have listened to it that way, even though that wasn't directly what he said. Right. Like, I personally like could not function if I didn't have caffeine every morning. So I would double back. But there's people that tell you that coffee and tea tastes like ass. I mostly yeah. want to slap those people because they're subhuman. But yes. that's, you know, it's a matter of taste. It doesn't make a product yeah. bad just because this particular run doesn't work for you. Now, in sure. Watch 2, we don't know what they're going to make. But if they make something that makes, say, photography better or podcasting better or whatever, we'll be laughing at what Ewan said in, you know, June of 2016 because...
Oh, and I'll be the first to agree that yeah. you know, it suddenly becomes something that is pertinent to me. But as it stands at the moment, I'm not getting enough from Watch that to make it worth £600.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And then I think it's easy for us in tech pundacy to say things sometimes from a personal standpoint. But it's not necessarily always intended to be a personal standpoint. Sometimes it's a matter of opinion, and this may work for somebody else. And so if I had a wish when it came to all podcasts, we would say, you know, we'd highlight the fact this is for me and for me only. Your mileage may vary. And most of us yeah. don't do it because it seems douchey. But reality is, I yeah. understood you, Ewan. I'm not going to jump on your case this time.
Right. what Doc just said reminded me of something Horace Dedieu said in one of his last podcasts. He basically said what people are looking at right now with the Apple Watch is a Generation 1 product. And if you look back to any other Generation 1 product and then look down the line what Apple did and where they went and what they changed, you see that it changed even significantly from Generation 1 to where we are right now. And in his opinion, the Apple Watch is probably the next big thing for Apple. It will take a couple of years. It will take a couple of iterations. The hardware needs to get right. The software needs to be right. But he thinks that it will eventually be bigger as the iPhone. It will take 5 years probably. But he thinks we will get there. And I have to agree with his reasoning. Whether he's right, I don't know. If we could read tea leaves and we knew how the future would look like, we would be rich by now.
I think as big as the iPhone is stretching it a little bit.
He said a couple of years down the line because...
Even a couple of years down the line, I think it's stretching it a bit.
Yeah, I can see the only reason why you would want to think that, and I kind of understand where he's going, because of the price point, the entry is easier. So if it could do things similar to what a phone can do,
yeah,
it's easier to get on a watch than yeah, it is to get to a phone just because of price.
If it yeah. can do a lot more than what it can do at the moment, maybe, but yeah. Even then I think it's still a stretch because you've got to get over that. I don't wear a watch. A lot of people do not wear a watch, and it's got to do stuff for people that is beyond, you know, what you normally
do. I mean, if you look
everything that's in your iPhone
1,
guys, one at a time, mate, one at a time. Go on, Patrice.
If you look at iPhone version 1 and you look at the current iPhone, it does a lot more. And I think the same will be the case with the Apple Watch. And that was his reasoning. He said, I mean, it is, voice is easier as an interaction model than touch is. And I mean, give it 5 years and we will have cellular data and it will probably be able to take pictures and all of that. And it is more personal. It is always on your wrist. And the reason why we didn't need a watch anymore and why a lot of people probably don't wear any watch anymore, like I did, is because we are surrounded by watches now. We have the time all everywhere. So there was no need for it. But that has changed with the Apple Watch. It is not about telling time, really. I mean, it's like with the iPhone. The phone part is probably the most unimportant app or functionality of a phone nowadays. It is about what it does in addition to that and how you interact with it and how personal it is. And the Apple Watch is more personal than a phone. I can give away my phone, my watch I take. I never give anyone else. It's mine.
Yeah, you know, and then, Matrice, I agree with you because like I asked Gas, is like if you could get basically 85-90% of what the phone does right now into the size of a watch, even if that remains moving the camera, I think that changes the game for a lot of people. And of course, yep. It might take some time, but that was Dick Tracy's thing. And then lastly, I think the funny thing is part of the stuff we used to use the phone for the most prior to, you know, smartphones would be something as simple as calling you in and going, hey, bro, man, what was the 3D printer settings again? And they'd be like, oh, easy, crank it up to 240, throw a little bit of glue stick on it. And I'd be like, oh, okay, cool. And I'd hang up. I'd say, I'll see you next week. And we hang up. But now we can do that through text messages or through searching it through Google and things like that. So that's the reason why the phone is kind of the simple one-off questions you can kind of search for yourself. Although we all have that idiot brother-in-law that refuses to do so and still calls you for crap he could Google. But for the most part, that's why it's gone. You can do a lot of the simple, hey, what time is the burrito place closed, Adam? Like, I do it myself now.
OS X became Mac OS Sierra.
Still obsessed, liking the name.
Still obsessed with the mountains. No gap between the Mac and the OS, though, this time. I found this out this afternoon, and I've just, before we started, I said this to everyone, they went, no. Apple have reintroduced RAID in disk utility. And I was like, well, it never went anywhere. It did. They took it out. It's been gone from El Capitan. Which I suppose...
You didn't know that?
I didn't know it had gone, no. I'd have been really pissed off if I've got a RAID drive that I needed to... Because I've got RAID drives here, but I haven't had to make a RAID.
Since a lot of people were very upset about that.
I would be well pissed off if that... Because I have made RAIDs in the past. I was annoyed at that, but it's coming back, so... should be as well. Christ.
They had Capitanese on disk utility. It's very basic in El Capitan.
Yeah, I mean, you could still do it
you had to do it from command line,
but...
Yeah, and the other thing is anywhere has been dropped from Gatekeeper, so it's removed the Gatekeeper option to allow programs from anywhere.
That's a little bit of a confusing statement because just the setting is gone, but you can still use the trick, which is Control-Click or right-click on the app when you open it up and then allow it. You know, you just have to allow it to run. Right. So you can still install from anywhere. It's just more to keep the average casual user from doing something stupid.
Yeah.
Which is good. Which is good.
I think so too.
Things like, so I use the Cura app that's from Ultimaker, that's you know, the slicing software for the 3D printer, and it just will not install that. You have to go in, and even when you open it anyway, it still won't let you open it. You have to go in, uncheck, and your padlock, switch to anywhere, then install it, then switch back to authorized developers.
Is that maybe because of SIP, though? Is it doing something under system integrity protection where it's trying to install stuff where the OS wouldn't normally let it?
Yeah, I don't know, but it's the only way I can get it to run, so...
Mm.
And it's a pain in the ass if they update it, like, you know, there's a monthly update to it, and you're like, oh, come on.
And Econ Bob is mentioning something that was more a, I would say, secret announcement, because they didn't announce it in the official keynote, but then later dropped it in the State of the Union, or even in some sessions, that they are, in fact, introducing a new file system. It is part of Sierra, but right now they have put a few things in place so you don't use it for anything serious, because it's still probably alpha or beta version, might change. It's called APFS, Apple File System. And right now you can boot from it and you can't use it Time Machine.
Well, the Time Machine thing is probably because after this comes out, it's likely Time Machine will be dead, because this file system would have built-in support for something called snapshots, which would basically... Yeah. Null and void any need for Time Machine.
You could keep Time Machine around and just use it to create them, to create those snapshots. So it's not about, I think right now it is really about keeping people from using it for anything that might be too important. So booting from it, if it breaks, would be bad. Destroying your backups would also be bad. So probably not a good idea to use it. But I mean, you can try it.
It only works on externals right now, too. But the biggest thing about it, the two biggest things about it that people need to know is, one, it's built from the ground up for flash and SSD. So it's a file system that's going to be able to be used across all Apple devices. So it really, I mean, they're kind of, they have it in Mac OS right now, but it's perfectly appropriate for iOS, watchOS, tvOS. It doesn't really matter anything that's using flash storage. You can still use it for spinning storage as well, but it's really designed to be a modern file system for flash. And then encryption is another huge part of what's built into it. So
yeah,
it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's basically, I mean, encryption, security, I mean, what you said, snapshots, all of that. I think the most interesting thing with encryption is, and I mean, we know why they need this. It has different levels of encryption. I mean, you can have disk level encryption and file level encryption. And I mean, that is used, if you remember, that is used in iOS. You can encrypt files, and the device itself is also encrypted. So it makes sense. But now you can use it everywhere, and I think that's the biggest change. I think Apple said that it will probably be introduced or formally introduced and be used in 2017. But yeah, who knows? That might change.
I have a feeling they're gonna force it. Like NFS is just gonna go away, and this is gonna be the new thing. And I don't think they're gonna give people much choice.
You mean HFS?
Yeah, sorry, HFS. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it is, if it is working as promised, it is in probably any way, in every way better than HFS Plus was. And I mean, HFS Plus is really old now.
It's like 30 years old. Yeah.
Bob in the chat room saying, will SSD drives be faster with APFS?
We don't know yet. Might be. I'm guessing yes, because you can optimize it better, and it is really written for SSDs, but I haven't seen any benchmarks yet, and it's probably too early for them anyway.
I think I did read that it solves some of the read-write issues in terms of longevity of the drives. So what's the thing that everybody always talks about needing to enable that Apple doesn't support? I'm blanking on it now.
Trim.
Trim, yeah.
Yeah, so Apple does support it for their own devices, or their own drives.
Which was pointless.
I mean, the other big change is that it can store more files. So in theory, I mean, although we haven't reached the limit yet, it can hold, or APFS will support bigger drives. I don't know how big, but way bigger. I think it's a 64-bit inode. So big.
The other thing that's happened, of course, because there was no hardware at WWDC, which no one really expected there to be any, though, is everyone's gone mental over what's coming up in September and December. So,
especially Adam, because it's going to cost him a fortune.
Everything.
I can't see. I mean,
everything.
Well, I don't see that there's going to be I mean, they'll run an event in September which will be iPhone-based, and you get the iPhone 7. There's a lot of people saying that the iPhone 7 will be a pointless upgrade, effectively. You'll have to wait for 8 in 2017 for it to be worthwhile. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But they're talking about new Thunderbolt displays are going to be due. New MacBook Pro is going to come as well. And they're talking about, effectively, the entire line will get a new form factor and refresh. And I'm just... I can't see it. I mean, you know, the form factor on the Mac Pro is fine. The G's great have stayed around for Christ knows how long, from the G4 onwards.
Oh, yeah, the Mac Pro is not... It'll get new innards.
It'll get new innards, and that's it. And that's not going to be a keynote. There's going to be no keynote stuff for hardware, I don't think, you know, massively. Apart from phone and watch.
They might refine a few things, you never know, but it will not be a major change.
I think they'll do a small... I think they'll do a small Mac announcement.
Yeah, announcement.
And it'll probably be centered around the MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it'll be at the town hall. I mean, it's going to be a small event.
Yeah. They'll say that they've gone to USB-C, and that'll be all of us going, oh, what?
Thunderbolt 3 and, you know.
No Thunderbolt. Yeah, just be USB-C.
Well, you're talking about two different things, though.
I know, I'm joking. Jesus Christ.
Oh, sorry.
God, sorry, mate. I didn't put an emoji on the end of that sentence.
Yeah, I totally missed it. There was no emoji in the
No emoji. I'm a bastard. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. They're absolutely awesome. We love them to bits. Show your support and solidarity for us, please, by checking out UK2. Go to britishjetnetwork.com/sponsors and click on UK2's link, and it'll take you through, and they'll know that we sent you. And that's the kudos that we need, really, nothing more than that. If you are a UK2 customer, then you can go to britishjetnetwork.com/UK2 when you sign into your account, and they'll know that you're a returning customer. And if you get a chance, just tweet out, thanks for supporting British Tech Network, at British Tech, or on Twitter, and something like that. I'll put it in Facebook or something, whatever. But they're brilliant. Please, please, please support them, because they support us. And the other people are Hoya. They've been fantastic to us. They've given us a Mac Mini for the Skype wall, and they've supported us with... They've completely redone my life, effectively, with... the glasses that they gave me for review to the studio. And I was talking to Mark from Hoya this week, and he said one of the biggest things that the BTN army could do for us is walk into an optician's. You know, if you pass an optician's, just walk in and say, excuse me, do you do Hoya lenses? And if they say no, say, oh, that's a shame, and walk out. That's all you're going to have to do. Yeah, just any time you're passing an optician's, walk in and say, excuse me, do you do Hoya lenses? And that's all Hoya would like from you. If you'd like some glasses, then yeah, get a fantastic pair of glasses that they do. The Avantech lenses are superb. There's a couple of, there's quite a few. I think we've had about a dozen listeners have got Hoya glasses now, and they all rave about them. They all think they're absolutely superb. And I've gone and got measured up for a new pair of Avantechs because I had my prescription redone. So they're looking after us. Please look after them as well. Walk into your opticians near the corner and go, excuse me, do you do Hoya lenses? Right, time for the cool thing. Starts off, Patrice.
Yeah, my cool thing today is a website, and I have to give a shout out to Adam because he basically introduced me to it. I think in the second to last Maccast. So great tip. It is history.google.com, where you can really see what Google is storing, all the searches, all the information. I think even the voice searches, if you have enabled that, you can listen to, and you can, on that page, you can delete things from their cache probably, and you can change your settings. So you can say, okay, don't track the, or don't store the searches I made on Google, or don't store the searches I made on YouTube, or the videos I watched, all of that. I never knew that site existed until Adam brought it to my attention. So, heads up.
Excellent.
That's a good site. It's a little scary when you go in there and you realize how much data Google has gathered on you. And you start looking back through your history of searches, and you realize how they can take different points and really figure out everything that's going on in your life. Based on, you know, he was doing this kind of search around that time, or he went to this place around that time and then was doing these kinds of searches over here. Oh, and you know, you can really start to see the connections. It's a little creepy.
I read a thing the other day that was suggesting that Uber, not only does it not make any money at the moment, it doesn't make any money at all from the taxi side of the business. And it never will. It doesn't ever plan to. The only thing it makes money from is selling your data. There you go. I thought that was quite interesting. Uber makes no money and never will make any money from the taxi side of the business. What they're doing is getting your locations, your drop-off points, where you go, etc. Payment systems that you use, your age data, and all that kind of crap that they gather. That's where all their money comes from.
It's an old statement, Ewan, that, you know, we've become the product, but we becoming the product is now big business.
Yeah. No, most definitely. It's an interesting. It was an interesting premise, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Good pick.
I want to know how much this data costs. Like, because everyone says that. I don't know what the heck I did to my camera. But everyone says that, and everyone's super leery of it. I really want to figure out how I can go buy some data just so I can see that, A, yes, you can, and it's not urban legend, and B, how much it costs, so that at least I know how much all of my internet traffic is worth. I'm serious. I'm not even joking.
Because everyone's data.
That conversation comes up at least 5 times a week from somewhere. And I'm one of those people that don't care, but there's so many people like taping up their cameras and crap, or you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I just want to know how to do it. Mm-hmm. How much does a data list cost, and where can we buy one? So we can.
It's all about connections. It's all about connections. Grabbing that data from here, there, and everywhere, connecting it so they can use it. And I think in about 5 years' time, suddenly they'll realize actually making no money out of it, and all the valuations of these companies will drop.
A tech bubble will burst. Yeah.
Yes.
We'll all be homeless. Adam, brighten the day for us, mate. That's a good chat.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick a little bit of an older app. I don't think it's been updated for a while, but it works great, and I've used it for years. And it's an app called Quotebook, and it is for collecting quotes. So the way I use it is I'll often be reading something, or I'll come across something that someone says, and I'm like, hey, I want to remember that. I want to, you know, potentially use that at some point, maybe in a speech that I'm going to give or a presentation that I'm doing, or just something that I think is cool and I want to remember, and I want to remember who said it. So that's all this app is you open it up. It gives you a chance to enter in the quote. You can, you know, copy and paste it from your clipboard, and then you can assign it to a person. It will tap into Wikipedia's. I think they have like a Quotepedia thing and some other information. You can put in the source. You can add a couple tags so that you can come back later, search and find it, and you can rate your quotes. And then I just use it, you know, to go through and recall things or find stuff that I thought was particularly cool. So like I just opened it up now and I had forgotten there's a great quote from Bill Nye. He says, everyone you will ever meet knows something you don't.
Does it start you off with any quotes or?
It does have some suggested quotes. Like when you open the app on the main screen, it will give you a quote and it does give you an opportunity to save that. I wish it did a little bit more. It does sync. It's iOS only, unfortunately, so it's iPad and iPhone. I really wish I had it on my Mac, because sometimes if I see something on my Mac, it's a little bit trickier to get that into the app. But I'll give you a tip related to that. So a lot of people forget that on iOS, if you're using iCloud, you can use iCloud tabs. So a lot of times the quote that I'll want to pull is from a website. So I just leave the tab open in Safari on my Mac and open it on my iPhone, you know, click the little plus symbol and scroll up a little bit and you can go right to that tab on your iOS device and bring that site up and then just copy and paste it in from there. So.
And later this year, it might actually get easier to do that.
Yeah, because macOS 10.12 and iOS 10, you can just copy and paste inter device.
All again, right. if you have a computer that supports continuity. Thank you.
Yeah.
Which I didn't until Monday. So hey,
one of the best quotes I ever heard was Jack Nicklaus. I spent 99% of my time losing and 1% of my time winning. But some people think I'm the best there's ever been.
Yeah,
good message about perseverance.
Yeah.
Yep. Good.
So save all those. Get them in a little library of your own favorite ones using Quotebook. It's a really great app. And like I said, it's been around for a while. I don't remember the price. I want to say it was maybe a buck or two.
Cool. Yeah.
I take it back. It's $5, which actually is even better in my opinion. It's well worth it if you like quotes and want to.
Yeah, I love quotes. Failure's not the falling down. It's the staying down. Mary Pickford. Doc, what have you got?
Okay, so I am a big Humanganist fan of my SnapScan, and they recently just introduced a new app, and it's called SnapScan Cloud. And if you're unfamiliar, SnapScan is a Fujitsu-based scanner that is just the best scanner out there ever, provided you're just collecting data, be it odd-sized documents, business card, invoices, letters, like whatever. You can scan it all in using one thing. What SnapScan Cloud now allows you to do is when you are using your scanner, and I have both an IX100, which is a little skinny guy about yo big. It's about the size of a foot-long hot dog. You can carry it around with you, and it's wireless and battery-powered, and you can scan on the road. I also have a big, giant sucker. It's not that big.
This one.
And it's a IX500. Which Patrice probably has because we all have ours on our desk. And you just throw papers at it and it sucks it in and scans it. Here's the cool thing. With SnapScan Cloud, now, Ewan has that. What it does is
I have a 300M.
It takes the document, it recognizes what it is, right? So it takes my invoices and my purchase order and automatically scans them into this thing that I use for QuickBooks. It takes my business cards and scans them into Evernote and then takes a copy of that contact and stores it in my phone. It, you know, it recognizes what is what, right? So my old bills and whatnot, you know, when I get stuff in from the cable company or the doctor's office or whatever, as I scan those in, it automatically sends them to what I have told is my iCloud storage drive in the folder I have called web receipts or whatever. So it actually can detect what document is what and throw it at the right cloud service, or you can just jumble them all into whatever cloud service that you're, you know, you're into. And that could be Dropbox, Evernote, OneDrive. What else do they support? Google Photos, Expensify, Shoebox, everything. And they're adding more as they go along. So the app is super expensive. It's free. so it will get rid of your other ScanSnap app. It becomes the go-to app, but it is amaze freaking balls. Like, I love it. I love it. I love it. And I was on the beta for it. I had to keep my mouth shut about this for about 6 months. It was killing me. So I'm so glad I get to tell you now. It rocks.
Excellent. The one thing about scanning stuff with the receipts that this is for the British audience a little bit more, probably. But my accountant sent me a letter warning me that scan software that where you look at, you know, you take a photo of your receipt and it automatically scans it for you and stores it, and then you can throw it away. Watch out, because sometimes on the other side, the tax reference number, the VAT references on the other side of the receipt, and unless you've got that reference number, you can't use the receipt for VAT. So.
Yeah, so that's why you need an iX500, which scans both sides.
Yeah.
Yes.
Watch out.
That is fast, really fast.
So wait, Doc, does this only work with the iX500 or iX100? Maybe you said that, but I might have missed it.
Those are the two most popular, but it does work with other scanners. Like, I don't know why you would scan your receipts with an iX600, which is a big above-the-thing lampshade that scans books that turns the pages for you.
No, but I have an older, I just have an older model, so I'm wondering if it's only supported on the new models.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Gaz, what have you got for us, mate?
Okay, so this isn't Mac direct, but it's iOS, and if you listen to your Mac using headphones, which I'm actually using at the moment, I don't know about you guys, but I get through these headphones, well, 10 a penny. Yeah. I'm always going through them. They get absolutely destroyed. So buying an expensive pair of these is something I don't like doing too often. So I'm always on the search for a reasonable pair of decent headphones. And what often you get with cheaper headphones is the cable. Sorry, I just knocked my mic. The cable that comes from the headphone rubs against your clothes, and you know, you can hear it scraping, and it's awful. The noise transition is horrible into your ears. But this pair that I've got, which I've put a link into the I was going to call them show notes then, but that's wrong. Into the chat room at 8:25-ish. There's an offer on from a company called Hi-Fi Headphones. They're $19.99, which is £10 cheaper than Amazon, even. Although there's a couple of quid on carriage from these, so it probably makes it about £7-8 cheaper than Amazon. And I bought them last week, and I've been using them ever since. And they're really good. They're really quite heavy. They're quite sturdy. They fit in my ear quite nicely, which is obviously suits your own personal taste. The sound on them is good. They're 20 quid. What's not to like?
Yeah, no, good. I've got to say, I've already bought a pair while Doc was doing it.
Yeah, I'm really liking them, and you know, they're metal. They feel metal as well, so they feel solid, really good quality. So yeah, it's worth a try. Unfortunately, it's a bit UK centric. I don't know whether you'll be able to get these at the low price outside of the UK. And I think you need to be quick, because I don't know how long a Hi-Fi headphones will have these on. I don't know about you, Ewan, but I use Hot UK, Hot Deals UK, a lot. And that's where I saw these. So.
Excellent. £29.95 on Amazon if you want the Prime on it. So they're going to be a little bit cheaper, most definitely. There's loads of different colours on Amazon, though, as well.
Well, there's different colours on this website as well, but these are the ones they've probably got too much stock of, and that's why they've probably reduced the price.
Excellent. Yeah, they're $39 on Amazon US if you wanted to buy it.
There you go. works. Good stuff like those. Michael Thing. I had a bit of trouble with this when I first started it. Do you remember the other week, I can't remember who it was, recommended a mileage application?
Mile IQ?
Yeah, yeah. And you did it and I was like, ah, cool, I'm buying that because I need that right now. And of course it was UK, it was US only, so I couldn't get a UK version. So I put a shout out, anyone can get me one please that's for the UK only. Jason Hooper came back in the Slack room and said, try this one, MileWiz.
Mm-hmm.
And MileWiz is in the UK store, automatic tracking. And I installed it and it was crap. It didn't do anything. It didn't pick up when I was driving. It's supposed to do auto start and all that kind of stuff. And all I did was uninstall it and reinstall it and it works perfectly now. And I've signed up for £40 for the year for unlimited journeys and cloud storage of all my journeys as well. So it'll back up to the cloud. And it's brilliant. So you start off with your car. You just put your phone in the car and off you go. You do your drive. It knows you're driving. So it then comes back when you get to where you go and you get out and you'll have a little pling on your notifications and you say, okay, I've got a new journey. Do you want to categorize it? And it's dead simple. You've just got this journey that appears in the format that I'm showing on the screen here. It's just like a little tiny map with a blue line about where you went. And then all you have to do is skim it left for private, skim it right for business mileage, and that's it's done. And it works with UK costs and that kind of stuff, and it's brilliant. It works seamlessly. Now I've reinstalled it for the second time, and all the data is backed up in the cloud. £40 gets me unlimited use throughout the year. And it's well worth the money because one of the problems I've got is I'm crap at sitting doing mileage reports and I'm going to get caught out at some point. So this is me, peace of mind now, done.
Yeah. And the developer Silverbase is really great. I think I picked, I don't know, a couple of shows ago or a year ago, I don't know when, I picked MoneyWiz, which is
by the Chatroom went MoneyWiz mad, yeah, they said it was good. So
great app, still use it, have been using it for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years now.
Excellent. What does MoneyWiz do?
Is it just it's basically, auto? I mean, it's your accounting stuff. I mean, you can track your expenses, income, all of that.
So how does it get it in there, though? Has it got automatic stuff through Apple Pay now, or?
Apple Pay, I don't know. It has you can you connect it to your bank account, so it can get in all the online banking, all this stuff in there. And I just do it manually because, I mean, I have to do it for my business anyway, and then I just do it for my personal stuff, too. So.
Cool. Yeah, good. There you go. The app's free and you get 20 trips a month. So you don't have to, if you do less than 20 business trips a month, you don't have to buy it. So plain and simple. I probably was about that. So I thought, nah, stuff it. They deserve it. Mm. Cool. Where can we get a hold of you, Patrice?
As always, every week here on the Mac Show, on Twitter at @casual_kitchen, although I rarely check that nowadays. And all the links and everything I do on thepatrice.com.
Excellent, mate. Adam, where are you? Well done, mate. Thanks for sticking it out with the voice. I do appreciate
it. Oh, hey. Thanks. Thanks for putting up with it. You can find me at the MacCast and pretty much MacCast everywhere on social media. And I want to remind people, because Doc's shirt reminded me, we're like a month away from MacStock.
Yeah.
And I am really looking forward to it. So it's the weekend of July 16th and 17th coming up. There's still tickets available, I think, if you want to go. It's in Chicago. We'd love to see you there. I'm getting my presentation ready now, and I'm really looking forward to it. So,
Gaz, are you going?
No, not this year, unfortunately. I'm really, well, a few days before that happens, it's my daughter's graduation, so kind of can't make it.
Oh, dear. But that does leave you free to come to the bash.
When's the bash?
The Bash, thank you for asking, is the 22nd and 23rd of July. We've got the Curry Night on the 22nd, and then the Bash is on the 23rd. We're only 5 weeks away from the Bash. You need to get your tickets, because I've got to pay for the venue next week, and we need to get people in through the door. So please, 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 buy your tickets. We're changing the structure of BTN. BTN will be registered as a not-for-profit social club from this point forwards.
Nice.
Any monies that come in, we keep in the business and we push back in into BTN, so there'll be no taxation or anything like that. And your membership will be either through your Patreon donations or it will be through buying your bash ticket every year and coming to that. And the more you spend with us via Patreon and the bash, then the higher level of membership that you're going to get for the new BTN Social Club. So there you go. And the bash ticket will cover you for some of that. So please buy your bash tickets now. BritishTechNetwork.com/bash tickets. It's £20 for the day for the bash. If you come in under 16s, free of charge. Over 16s, £20, regardless. Hard line, sorry, cut off. And if you're thinking, oh, I could bring something and help out, and then maybe I wouldn't have to buy my ticket, it's your contribution to the day. What we're doing is piling it all in, and then everyone gets stuff out. You don't need to bring anything. All your food will be provided. All your beer and wine will be provided. All your soft drinks will be provided. Tons of fun will be provided as well. We had a fantastic year last year, and hopefully the weather's going to hold out for us again this year. If you come into the curry, it's a £10 deposit per head, and that includes kids. But then when we get the bill at the end, we'll split that amongst us adults rather than the kids being involved. And we're not doing beers on a tab anymore because that just got silly last year. There was an awful lot of stuff. So you buy your own beer when you get there, and then we'll just do the food bill separated between us. So there we go. Can you come then, Cass? 22nd, 23rd?
Kismet, yes, definitely. You're definitely going to try and get the Kismet. Still not sure about the bash, but I'll get my ticket.
Well, Patricia's coming. So.
I will definitely.
Yeah, I know. It'd be great. I should try and make it.
Excellent.
A couple other quick things on MacStock. I wanted to mention MacStockConferenceAndExpo.com is the website where you can see all the speaking and stuff like that. If you want to get a discounted ticket, 25% or $25 off rather, plus an opportunity to maybe get a free gift. Email me. If you're really serious about going, email me and I will get you a code and all of that stuff. So maccast@gmail.com. And also, if you want to see some great videos about the presenters that are going to be there, Chuck Joyner over at macvoices.tv did a bunch of video interviews with everybody who's going to be speaking. I think he called it the Road to Mac Stock. So check out those videos.
Excellent. Most people that went last year, I think, are trying to get back there this year. It was a great time, absolutely great. And the professionalism from Mike Potter on the organization was superb. He's a great guy. So say hi to him for me, Adam. We go back, don't we?
I'm definitely planning on it next year. Doc, where are you, sir?
You can find me all over the internets at Doc Rock, you know, Twitter, Instagram, whatever. And then a couple of times a week hanging out here on this show.
Excellent. Gaz, where are you?
Oh, so easy. Gazmaz.com on the Twitters, twitter.com/Gazmaz, just GAZMAZ for Z cars, of course.
Good man. Thank you very much. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again next week as normal. The live show will be on Thursday, however, not Friday, because it's just the way it's worked out. So, but then we'll be going back to Fridays after that, so I promise. It's all confusing, don't worry. Follow us at British Tech on Twitter, and watch out for the news show as well, because Carl's doing that every single day and getting some good kudos for doing it. Well done, Carl. See you all next week. Thanks for listening.